In this week's parsha, we get the mitzvah and the details of the chayshah and the breastplate that contained the 12 stones and the names of the tribes, as Rashi describes, engraved on the stones. So Pasuk Tesvav begins the details. This is parsha Chof Ches. So Pasuk Tesvav, the Pasuk, begins to describe how it is to be made and is described and referred to as the chayshah mishpat, the chayshah of judgment. We'll soon see the meaning of that. At any rate, the Torah goes on to describe how it is to be fashioned. And then the Torah says, in Pasuk 29, after having concluded all the details of the way it is to be made, the Nosa Aaron and Aaron should carry the names of the Bnei Yisrael in the Cheshen and Mishpat over his heart when he comes into the Holy as a constant remembrance before Hashem. Then in Pasuk Lamed, it was Pasuk Choftes. The Torah says, into the Cheshen, V'nosat el Cheshen HaMishpat, into the Cheshen of Judgment, you shall place the Esaurim V'esatumim, the Urim and the Tumim. Again, we'll see in a moment what these words mean. V'hoya leiv Aaron, and it should be on Aaron's heart when he comes before Hashem. And Aaron shall bear the judgment of the children of Israel on his heart before Hashem constantly. That's how it concludes. So let's see Rashi. This is a Rashi Sicha. So Rashi's commentary now on Pasuk Lamed of Parsha Chof Ches, explaining what is meant by the Urim and Tumim. Says Rashi, Huksav Shem HaMefeirish. This is the writing, it's a scroll, where Hashem's explicit name is written. There are different opinions, whether this means the Yud Kei Vav Kei, or the 42-letter name of Hashem, or the 72-letter name of Hashem. In Pashtus, it's the Yud Kei Vav Kei. Rashi continues, so Urim V'Tumim refers to this scroll, this Ksav. Shoyenoysin B'Seich Kifle HaChoshen, which he put into the folds of the Choshen. The Choshen, of course, was made as a rectangle. The top half is where the stones were embedded, and the bottom tapestry was then folded underneath the stones, underneath the top part. It was folded into two, and it's there that this scroll was placed. Why is it called Urim V'Tumim? Urim, of course, the Shesh of the word Urim is Ur, light, and Tumim, Tmimus, whole or perfect. So Rashi says, Shal Yodai hu Meir Dvarov o Misamim es Dvarov. For by means of the Urim V'Tumim, the Choshen would illuminate its words and bring perfection to its words. When there be questions of national import, Rashi also explains how this works. So the Kohen Gadol would gaze at the Urim V'Tumim, or the Choshen. The Urim V'Tumim is inside the Choshen, and then certain letters would light up. So the Urim V'Tumim gave the power for the letters to light up. That's the Urim. And answer the question, go to war, not go to war, for example. Questions of national significance. So Urim means they would light up. Tumim means perfection, meaning to say exactly as the Choshen, now the lit up Choshen, thanks to Urim V'Tumim, would indicate. That's exactly how things would occur. The predictions always came perfectly true. Rashi continues. So explains that what Urim V'Tumim is, a scroll placed in, which we pointed out now already, that there are other opinions, the Rambam most notably, who makes no reference to any kind of scroll. It's nowhere in the Torah itself. And he says that the Urim V'Tumim is just a description of the function of the Choshen. The Choshen would light up, and Tumim, its words were perfect. But there was no actual scroll. It's integral to the Choshen itself. Back to Rashi. Now Rashi continues. And all of a sudden we get now a piece of history and a halacha. Rashi says, B'mikdash sheni, in the second Beis HaMikdash, there was the Choshen. The Kohen Gadol wore it. As he goes on to say, Sheyav Shal Kohen Gadol Lias Mechusa Begodim. Kohen Gadol must wear all 8 garments and can't be lacking any of them. However, but the Urim Mitumim, this scroll was not inside it. Rashi concludes his commentary here and says, it's because of this scroll that it's called Choshen Mishpat. Mishpat means judgment, as it says later in Bamidbar, referring to Yeshua. Hashem instructs Moshe Rabbeinu to tell Yeshua to consult with the Urim, v'sholei b'mishpat Urim, and he will consult with the judgment of the Urim, because it has this ability to clarify judgment. Here means in the sense of clarifying, therefore questions, therefore it's called the Mishpat HaUrim, because of the scroll that was placed in it. Okay, the Rebbe raises a number of difficulties with this Rashi. First of all, the first basic problem is that Rashi, his whole mandate is to explain the literal meaning of the Pasuk. And so why here are we getting this whole explanation about what happened in the second base of Mikdash, and then explain, giving a reason that Kohen can't be lacking the garments and there was no Urim Bitumim. Why is this relevant here in our Pasuk? Furthermore, why is Rashi explaining a pasuk in Parshas Pinchas in Bamidbar? That's why it's called Mishpat, because as the pasuk says, "If surely be Mishpat Urim," and he will inquire of the judgment of the Urim. Explain that there when we get to that pasuk. Why is it explained it here? And moreover, Rashi's explanation now, this latter part of this commentary here, seems to contradict the first part. The first part, he tells us that the Urim was this scroll. Now you're telling me that the scroll didn't exist in the Choshen, but the Choshen is called the Choshen HaMishpat, the Choshen which clarifies, which answers questions. So it would appear then that in the second Beis HaMikdash, the Choshen was lacking. So the second half of the commentary, which explains what happened in the Bayis Sheni, seems to contradict the beginning of his commentary, where he says the Urim VeTumim was placed in the Choshen, and it's called Choshen HaMishpat because of the Urim VeTumim, and now you have a Choshen HaMishpat which is lacking the Urim VeTumim. So it doesn't clarify. That needs to be understood as well. Now, in the next Rashi, on the same pasuk, Rashi says as follows. On the words, as Mishpat B'nei Yisrael, that Aaron should carry the Mishpat B'nei Yisrael, the judgment of the children of Israel, on his heart before Hashem, constantly, and this is how the whole parasha ends. So Rashi says, two explanations. Mishpat, Dover Shem Nishpotim Varechachim Al Yodai. It's the means by which they were judged and arrived at a conclusion, meaning it clarified. Im Lasis Dover Eli Lasis. Should we do something and not do something? Again, questions of national significance. That's one explanation. So it's called Mishpat B'nei Yisrael because it brought clarity. It brought clarity to questions. Then Rashi brings, Lefi Medrash Agada, why is it called Choshen at Mishpat B'nei Yisrael? Because the Choshen would atone for those who pervert justice. Choshen Mechapra Al Ma'afsei Hadin. And concludes, V'nikra Mishpat Hashem Slichas HaMishpat. And it's called judgment because of the forgiveness of sins involving judgment. Now the problem here is as follows. Rashi had already basically given these two explanations earlier on at the beginning of the parsha dealing with the Choshen. The very outset, the Torah calls it, go back to Pasuk Tesvav, Vasisa Choshen Mishpat, you shall make a Choshen of judgment, and then goes on to describe how it's to be done. So there Rashi says, What's this judgment? So his first explanation there is Shemachapra al Kilkul Adin. It's called this because it atones for miscarriage of justice. And then gives Dovar Ach another explanation that it clarifies Mishpot Shemevarer Dvorei. It substantiates its statements and its promises are true. The promises come through the Urim V'Tumim are true. So that's the second meaning in Mishpat. It has the sense of when a person presents his argument, he wants to prove that his argument is correct. We're not talking here about an actual judgment. Rashi goes on to say that Mishpat has three explanations. In this second explanation, we're talking about an actual judgment, which is the most literal, obviously, Mishpat, a law, a ruling, but rather clarification. So this is essentially the same explanation that he gives here, but the problem is, why does he repeat it? Number one, and number two, reverses the order. And that's significant, because we know, let's review this. Here in our Pasuk, which we're discussing, Pasuk Lamed, the first explanation is it clarifies. The second explanation is it atones for perverted laws, perverted judgments. But in Pasuk Tesvov, when the Parsha first introduced us to the Choshen Mishpat, there the Rashi's explanations are reversed. And there the first one is what? It atones for miscarriage of justice. The second one is it clarifies questions presented to it. Now this change in order is significant because if you know Rashi always brings the first explanation because it's the most simplest to explain the Pasuk. So why is the order reversed? In the beginning it's simple to explain the word Mishpat to mean what? Literally, judgment, laws, and the Choshen atones for it. But now we come to the end of the parasha. For some reason, it's more literal to say that no, it clarifies questions of national importance. And the second explanation only is that it atones for miscarriage of judgment, which is a more literal meaning of the word mishpat. Why is that relegated here to the second explanation, whereas earlier it's the first and primary explanation? All right, let's begin now to answer the questions. And let's just review again the basic questions on this Rashi here. This Rashi, this first commentary of Rashi on Pasuk Lamed. What compels Rashi to talk about the Bayis Sheni? And now that he tells us that the Bayis Sheni didn't have the Urim V'Tumim, which according to Rashi is a scroll, so in what sense is it whole? And then we'll answer the other questions as well. Why he changes the order of the meaning of the word Mishpat here in Pasuk Lamed in contrast to Pasuk Tesvov. The essential question that bothers Rashi, that he needs to answer, that the reader of the Psukim is struck with, is as follows. Let's get the flow of things. The Torah describes all the details of how the Choshen is to be made, and it concludes with that Aaron, Pasuk 29, Aaron should bear the names of the children of Israel on the Choshen Mishpat when he enters the sanctuary, as the Mishkan is a constant remembrance before Hashem. Now, that statement clearly concludes the whole description and definition of the Choshen, what it is and how it's made. All of a sudden, Pasuk Lamed, the Torah says, you should place into the Choshen HaMishpat the Urim V'Tumim. And that should be on Aaron's heart when he comes before Hashem, and Aaron will carry the judgment of the children of Israel in his heart before Hashem. The clear inference at the simple level is that the Urim V'Tumim is not part of the Choshen itself. It's something additional, significant and important, but nonetheless additional and extraneous to the essence of the Choshen itself. And that's what Rashi says, unlike the Rambam, that in fact the Urim V'Tumim are a scroll which is added into the Choshen, but not part of the Choshen itself. The Choshen itself is one of the garments of the Kohen Gadol, and it's the covered Lisiphodes for his glory and for his beauty, of which the Urim V'Tumim adds nothing. It's a scroll that no one even sees. It is a separate function. What's the separate function? The separate function is, when necessary, and there were questions of national significance, it was consulted. But if it wasn't there, and that's lacking, and it's an incredible thing that's lacking, this divine communication. It doesn't detract, however, from the Choshen itself. This is the essence of what Rashi is saying. Let's revisit Rashi. So Rashi says, now that he's established that the Urim Tumim is not part of the Choshen itself, which is why we get no instructions as to how to fashion it, as the commentaries on Rashi explain, the Ramban doesn't tell us how the artisans made it, because they didn't have to make anything. It's a simple scroll that is written and was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not quite clear whether he wrote it then or it was existed already and he placed it in. And it's something additional. So if it's something additional, in order to demonstrate that it's something additional and not integral to the Choshen, that's why Rashi goes on to demonstrate this and show the Tak in the second base of Migdash, there wasn't the Urim Vitumim. But still, the Kohen Gadol was lacking of none of his garments. Because as a garment of one of the eight vestments that the Kohen Gadol has to wear, that was perfect without the Urim Vitumim. And therefore, Rashi concludes also, in explaining the Pasuk in later in Parshas Pinchas, it's critical now. And he says, it's because of the Ksav that it's called Mishpat, because the Mishpat component, namely the fact that it clarifies questions asked of it, that is extraneous. The Pasuk is saying here now, V'nasa Aaron is Mishpat b'nei Yisrael. Aaron will, this is the final Pasuk, Pasuk Lamed. Aaron will carry the judgment of the children of Israel on his heart. This is a separate thing that it clarified. It clarified matters. But it's, when asked, but it's still extraneous to the essence of the Choshen, which is an ornament, an elaborate garment for the prestige and the honor of the Kohen Gadol. Now that also explains why, when explained in the continuing Rashi, as Mishpat Pnei Yisrael, what's the explanation? How does he understand the word Mishpat? Here Rashi is compelled to say here, in Pasuk Lamed, at the end of the entire discussion, for the reasons we just pointed out, that Mishpat means that it clarifies things, again, because that's extraneous to the actual Choshen itself. But then Rashi has to bring a second explanation, the Medrash HaGadol, because that explains, this explanation that it's Mishpat, it clarifies, explains why we only get this instruction after it's all complete and he's told to wear it, and then the Torah says, you place inside the Urim Vitum, maybe something extraneous for a separate function, as long as it lasted during the first base, up until the end of the first base and Mikdash, you clarified questions. But still, the problem is, and Ashi, where Ashi has to bring a second explanation, is because the word Mishpat more literally means judgments, not clarifying, but rulings. So he brings the second explanation, and it's called Mishpat because it forgives perverted those who pervert justice. Here it comes out that the second explanation is more literal with respect to the word Mishpat, that it means rulings rather than clarifying questions addressed to it. But because of the whole general context of the Parsha, the fact that this is an addition, it's added to the conclusion of the description of the Choshen, Rashi brings it as a second explanation. And that's why in the beginning, before the reader has encountered this oddity, and this oddity or this whole additional instruction to add Urim Vitumim, and we just introduced at the outset to the Choshen Mishpat, there Rashi has the order in the reverse. Because there's no reason to say that Mishpat means anything other than judgment itself. So there Rashi says, ruling. Why is it called Choshen Mishpat? Because it atoned for perverse judgment. Going back to Pasuk Tezvav. And the second explanation is, again, and invoking the Urim Vitumim, the second explanation at the outset is that it is the scroll and it clarified matters, but that is the second explanation at the outset because it's more favorable at the outset to explain Mishpat literally in totality as the Choshen of judgment, Choshen Mishpat, in the sense that it atones for the perverse judgment. Only later, when the Torah says, and you shall place inside the Urim V'Tumim, and then calls it Mishpat, they were compelled to say, his explanation number one, that he doesn't mean judgment anymore, but the Urim V'Tumim's function, not the Choshen as a whole, but the Urim V'Tumim specifically, its function is to clarify matters addressed to it. But even if that is lacking, as a Choshen, the Choshen still remains. So, we're saying that in the beginning of the Rashi's, beginning of the parsha, before we're told about putting in the order of Itumim, then we understand Choshen Mishpat in totality, as the first explanation is that it atones for perverse judgment. Now she gives a second explanation in anticipation of what's going to come later, evidently, namely that there's an order of Itumim that's placed inside it, so there Mishpat, and it's also called after that the Mishpat B'nei Yisrael. So therefore, we have to say that Mishpat doesn't mean what it usually means, law, judgments, but rather clarification, and that's the second explanation at the outset. But at the conclusion, once we've encountered the commandment to put the Urim V'Tumim as a separate additional commandment to the overall Choshen, there the first explanation is, what is the Mishpat here? And what it is that which clarifies. Because that was the function, in fact, of what the Urim V'Tumim brought to the Choshen. An additional property. Just to round this discussion out, according to the Rambam also says that the second base in Migdash is one of the five things that were lacking. The Shechina wasn't manifest, and therefore the Choshen didn't light up in the second base of Migdash. Not because there was no ksav in it. There was no ksav to begin with. But because the level of as we'll see in a moment, divine revelation was less, and the sanctity in the second base of Migdash, than the first. According to Rashi, it needs to be understood also why they didn't put in this ksav in the second base of Migdash. The answer, it seems, also because since overall of the decline of the effect of, as we'll see in a moment, of the Beis HaMikdash to the world at large, therefore there's no point in putting in this ksav, this scroll of the Shem HaMefurash, or the various names that they did put into the Choshen during the first Beis HaMikdash. The Rebbe concludes here with the explanation, Yayin Shel Torah, as the Rebbe referred to it, the wine of Torah, the inner dimension conveyed in Rashi's words. And that is as follows. Chassidus explains, as we mentioned moments ago, that the difference between the first and second Beis HaMikdash is not so much in terms of the Gila Likus that happened in the Beis HaMikdash, but rather the effect on the surroundings, the environment. The Amshocha in the Gvulin, outside the Beis HaMikdash, and then, namely, the time of the second Beis HaMikdash, the Bayis Sheni, this level of Bina, that's the level in Kabbalah, which was revealed in the Beis HaMikdash, could only be revealed in the Beis HaMikdash proper, but not beyond it. That's Alpi Kabbalah, explaining Chassidus, the difference between the Bayis Rishon and the Bayis Sheni. So it comes out that we see this reflected in Rashi. Rashi is saying exactly the same thing. Because the Choshen itself was in the Bayis Sheni. What was missing? The Mishpat. What's Mishpat? Mishpat is how Yidna are to conduct themselves vis-a-vis the world at large. Again, the classic example is go to war, not go to war. The effect on the world. So that's what's missing, because the Ksav isn't there. But the Etzim Choshen itself is whole and complete, even in the Bayis Sheni. Again, reflective of the fact that the Beis Hamikdash itself, the sanctity there was the same as the Bayis Rishon, was only in terms of its effect on the world at large. And according to Rashi, the Urim V'Tumim, just an additional thing, which caused the Mishpat, namely clarifying questions of how we are to engage the world, that is missing in the second Beis HaMikdash, but not the actual Choshen itself. The Rebbe concludes that this is similar to Golos in general. It's brought down in Kabbalah, but Chaim Vital brings that the word Choshen is begimat, is the same letters rather as the word Nochash. Nochash being Nochash HaKadmoni, the primal serpent, the cause of the primal klipa, the cause of all sin and golus. That's on the one hand. On the other hand, we find, brought down by Rabbi Ephraim, one of the authors of quoted one of the Tosafists, one of the Baalei HaTosafos. So he is quoted as saying that Cheshne is begematria Mashiach. Right? Ches Shin Nun is 358, and also Mashiach is begematria 358. The Nun is the replaced with the Mem and the Yud. So we have these extremes. That on the one hand, Cheshen is the same Oisiyas as the word Nachash. On the other hand, Cheshen is Begimatria Mashiach. So how does this reconcile? The answer is because, what is Golus? Golus is all because of, first of all, the origin is the Chet. And the Chet starts with the Nachash. And Golus in general, Tatab explains in Tanya from Kabbalah, that the Guf, and in general, Klip is called Mishcha Dechavia, the serpent skin, which conceals the Nefesh HaLikis, but the Nefesh HaLikis, the Neshama of the Yid, is complete and perfect, but concealed. And likewise, even in Golos, Elikus is concealed. Our whole Tachlis is, and the whole Kaveda is, to reveal Elikus in the world, and thereby, and bring it out from its state of concealment, and thereby, we need to know that the Cheshen exists. It's only covered by the Nachash. So our Aveda is to reveal the Likus in the world and thereby bring about Mashiach. And then that will affect the Cheshen Mishpat, that the Cheshen, its effect will be felt in the world and illuminate the world and transform the world. So this is the Aveda of the Yid, is to turn Bekitzer from the Nachash into the Cheshen, which results in Mashiach. But the point is, knowing all along that Elikus is here, the Neshama is whole and complete in the Guf, our whole Aveda is to reveal that truth. Well, the Rebbe explained in the later years that Goyla and Geula, exile and Geula, are essentially the same letters. The difference is the letter Aleph. Aleph referring to Aleph Shalom, to the Eibishter himself. So the Eibishter is present, and the Neshama of the Yid is whole and perfect and complete. We need only reveal it, and then merit Cheshen, Begimatri, Mashiach, Ubekorev, Mamash.